Well, God knew. Now, the size of it. But now, notice, first of all, he found favor with God. Make thee an ark of gopher wood. They don't know what that wood is. Some things are a type of a cypress. Nobody knows exactly what it is. Right, make thee an ark of gopher wood, rooms, and literally the word means nests. Nests are little cubicles or places for these animals. Nests shalt thou make in the ark or rooms, and shalt pitch it within and without with pitch. And this is how thou shalt make it. The length of the ark 300 cubits, the breadth of it 50 cubits, and the height 30 cubits. Right, so here then, from one end to the other, we have 300 cubits. All right, that's 450 feet, which is more we understand better. Then here we have the width of it here. The width of it is 50 cubits or 75 feet. And then the height of it is 30 cubits. The height of it is 30, which would be 45 feet. When I preach on Hebrews 11, which I do occasionally, I'll preach on that. And by faith, Noah built this ark. By faith, he built the ark here. You ever thought about how big that thing was? I never did once. One time, I went out and I drove me a stop down over here, and I stepped off what I thought was 450 feet, put on another stop. Came back in the middle, and then I put 37 and a half this way and 37 and a half this way. And then I tried to imagine what 45 feet high would be. And that gave me kind of an idea of what to act by faith really meant. Now, another thing, you think about cutting down those trees, felling the trees, bringing them together, shaving them here and cutting them so they'll fit together here. And they didn't have nails to drive in bolts. I reckon they didn't. They were smarter than we think they were. I know to build that. But here were the holes you had to drill somehow and build pegs to put in those holes to hold it together. And yet it was 45 feet high. That was three stories, 15 each, and that's awful high stories. Their 15-foot story is. We'd make about 4 or 5 stories out of that today, wouldn't it, Brother Harry? About 9 feet to a story. All right, but there were, so it'd be about 4 or 5 stories high as we would build today, yet he had to put all that together. Now you think about that. So next time a fellow talks to you about being saved by faith only, you ask me, reckon old Brother Noah, he understood that faith business. He did it by faith, for God told him to do it. But it wasn't faith only. It included the cutting down of a lot of trees, bringing them together, smoothing them up, or rather shaving them up and fixing them here, and putting them together and building this ark here. That wasn't all of it. He told him to build the ark. Now notice something else here. Now we're not told all the details. I don't know all the details. Nobody does. There was no use to go into the detail about this. Why? There would be another one built anyhow. That was the last one ever to be built like that. So it gives you an idea of it. And now notice further, a light or roof, which I think light probably is better, shalt thou make to the ark, and to a cubit shalt thou finish it upward, that is from above, and the door of the ark shalt thou set in the side thereof, right, with lower, second, and third stories shalt thou make it. Now what was this up here toward the roof? My guess is, that there was an air space all around that. Now here he would bring up a pole here and a pole there to support the roof and maybe to hang over. That would give air a chance to blow in, clean out the air there. I think it needs a little ventilation, don't you? I'd hate to spend a year in there with all those animals without any ventilation. And so here then was the means of ventilation. Now just how that was done or just what's involved, I don't know. Seems to me that it mean more than that, but if you had a good breeze all the time blowing in and blowing through, and you might have fixed some ways here to bring the air down. We don't know. I was reading a very interesting book yesterday about Glick's excavations and studies, looking for Solomon's mines. And when he found the the outline of the old ruins of it. Why, here they had an opening facing up the arroyo, the Arabada, from which the wind blew constantly, and here you had a natural bellows. As the wind blew in and kept the fires hot, they didn't have to stand there and do it like this, don't you see? Well, all right, it may be then that Noah built some ducts here somehow to bring the air down among the animals. I feel sure he did. We're not told that. We're left with that. But anyhow, it took care of the situation. Now further, set the door in the side then. Or was it in the first story, second story, third story? Where was the door? I don't know. He doesn't tell us that. And I, behold, did bring the flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh. Wherein is the breath of life. Not all flesh there would include the animals. But I want you to know something else. Now it says here, you and thou set in the door, and you tell them, you build it. Now you build the ark, and here's what I'm going to do. I will bring the flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh. Right, you do what I tell you to do. I'm going to do what I say I'll do. Now God's telling us to prepare for judgment. So he said, I'm going to bring a judgment on the earth. Now God's telling us to make our preparation. He tells us what he is going to do. Alright, further. I'm going to destroy wherein is the breath of life from under heaven. Everything that is in the earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with thee, and thou shalt come into the ark, thou and thy sons and thy wife, and thy sons' wives with thee. Now here definitely, God decides who comes into the ark. God decides today who's in the church and who's going to be in heaven. Now if you want to use the ark as kind of a parallel to the church, all right. But I think our brethren in times past have made too much of that, really. I think they made too much of it. You've probably heard some sermons preached on it and all that. I just never could preach a sermon on that to save my life, to make the ark a prophetic symbol of the church. I think you can sort of see a parallel there. That's all right. But I think we carried it a little too far sometime. I've never preached on it. Don't think I'll be doing it very soon. I'm going to hear the ones that are going in to it. Now this covenant, what is the covenant? Is this the covenant of the rainbow that's mentioned later in the 8th chapter? Probably it is. Probably it is. We'll discuss that when we come to it. All right? And that thou shalt come and told them who to bring in. And of every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort shalt thou bring into the ark to keep them alive with thee. Now notice further, and they shall be male and female, of the birds after their kind and of the cattle after their kind, of every creeping thing of the ground after its kind, two of every sort shall come unto thee to keep them alive. And take thou unto thee of all food that is eaten, and gather it to thee, and it shall be for food for thee and for them. Not only build that ark, Noah, but also go out here and gather up enough food for all these animals to live on for a year, and for you and your family to live on for a year. So he gave them quite a job, didn't he? He sure did. So his salvation by faith, as I view it, was quite a ways from faith only. It was faith, all right. It was by faith he did what God told him to do. And that's what faith is, to guard his word and do what he says. All right? Now then, verse 22. Thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he. All right? Now you go back up here to verse 8. And Noah found favor with God. All right? Now here's the favor. He found grace with God. And thus did Noah, according to all that God commanded him, so did he. Thus did Noah, but the Bible says what? He said, by faith he accomplished all of this. So by faith involves the grace of God, the favor of God. I like that word grace better, so all right. The grace of God here, and his faith that took hold of it, and thus he did according to all that God commanded him. The writer of Hebrews uses him for an example. And anybody that can't see, what's involved in that matter of being saved by faith. When he looks at Noah and Abraham and those fellows, there's something wrong with you. Maybe one fellow you say maybe get poked through the fool hole. I don't see any other chance for him, do you? That fellow can't see that. Maybe he'll get there that way, I don't know. Or at any rate, now an hour is up, and I about decided that's long enough every night. That's about as long as we got a couple of chapters. And this is slow along here. To me, this is very slow because there's some things there that I want to get. Now, a little bit later, while we're going to hit some very high spots there and all of that. But in the seventh chapter, we have the flood itself, the bringing in of them into the ark, and the flood that came, the length of the time, and all of that. And then the assuaging of the waters, we'll hit that rather briefly next time. But I think we've got about enough tonight. You got any question of what we've said? Any question over it? To me, this point that I made here is a very, very significant point. I think that's the point that God is making. The two lineages, the lineage through Cain, the lineage through Seth. The one was flesh, the other was spirit. So the spiritual people were over here, are here. Now, when the spiritual began to intermarry and integrate with the world, what do you have? You have tyranny, you have tyrants on the earth. Go back to the beginning of the church. Look at that, look at this change from the pure church to the Roman Catholicism. And there you have a tyrant. The Roman Empire was never a greater tyrant than was the Roman Catholic Church. And then you come on down and you take the Protestants where they started out, a real battle for right. But when they compromise with the world, what do you have again? You have the same thing. Right, what do you have in the church in the last 75 years, 40 years, 50 years? I'd say 150, 60 years ago when we started the Reformation movement, when it was begun. Now, here was a real battle. And the world and the church were separate. You can tell the difference. But after a while, when the church began to compromise with the world and introduce the things of the world, what do we have? Then I don't suppose any group of people in the world anymore a liberal far away than those of the Christian church. We started over. Did fine for about 50 years, 60, about 40 years ago, 35 or 30 years ago. Here again, the church starts out compromising with the world. Marrying the world, bringing in the things of the world. Well, after all these are brought in, what do you have? You have now nothing that really stands, very few that really stand for anything. And so here you go. And it'll always be that way. I think that's a great lesson. All right, the second great lesson is that of Noah, the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, perfect before God, full, complete, according to that day. Now then through him, he found favor with God, and here by his faith, doing what God said. This is the fellow really that finds favor with God, the person here that is worthy of that we'll accept what God is offering. Now, the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation unto all men. But who appropriates that grace is the person by faith does what God said do and leaves it there. He doesn't go beyond it. That's 60. Now, any question? Ask for a question. I start kept talking. But I have a question. Well, that's fine. The class is excused. We'll see you next week, the same time, and I think we had nearly 30 before. Oh, let me count them. 33. Thank you. Very fine, class. We appreciate it so very much. And now then, you're excused. All right. chapter 7 last time. And in chapter 7, we can go through rather rapidly. Chapter 6, the Lord told Noah to prepare the ark. And Noah did what God told him to do, verse 22. So now with verse 22, the ark is completed. And now Noah is ready to enter with his family, and the beast and the rain is ready to come. Now, there's a question that's raised by individuals as to whether the flood was universal or whether it was just a local where the people were at that time. I think there's no question of whether it was universal. That the flood covered all the earth. We're going to notice some points tonight. It seemed to me clearly to indicate that. And Jehovah said unto Noah, come thou and all thy house into the ark. For thee have I seen righteous before me in this generation. Right, so the generation was one of wickedness. It became so great God could no longer tolerate it. And it was now time to bring a judgment. Now of every clean beast I shall take of thee seven. And seven, the male and his female. And of the beasts that are not clean, two, the male and the female. Now you remember back in the earlier chapter, he said take a pair of each. But that doesn't mean that he that was a general statement, that there would be two of each, but it was not limited to that. Now when God got ready to tell him how many to take, it was now seven of the clean and two of the unclean, or the seven pairs, of the birds also of the heavens, seven and seven, male and female, to keep seed alive upon the face of all the earth. For yet 7 days, and I will cause it to rain upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. And every living thing that I have made will I destroy from off the face of the ground. And Noah did according to all that Jehovah commanded him. Now when he says for yet 7 days in verse 4, that means from the time that he told him to enter, begin entering, he'd have 7 days in which to enter with his family and bring the animals in. Now the ark is built, the food is stored, everything is ready to bring the animals in. And here's a week in which to do that. All right, and so he's ready to enter. There's a question that comes to our mind here. How did he know what the clean and the unclean were? I don't know. I don't know whether God designated them or whether just how, or seemingly the Lord himself directed them to enter. Because they didn't have to go out and find them and drive them in. So he decided which were the clean and the unclean. Or it may be that Noah had learned that. But up until this time, we've had no indication that they ate flesh, that the people did. Now they may have. If they did before the flood, that would be without the sanction of Jehovah. That would have been a part of their rebellion. So whether they did or didn't, we do not know. We are not told. Another interesting thing is this boy. God said, I'll cause it to rain 40 days and 40 nights. And you'll notice that over and over you have this 40. Moses went up in the mount with Jehovah 40 days and 40 nights. 40 nights. The Lord was in the wilderness 40 days and 40 nights. And Elijah ate the food that the Lord directed him to eat, and then he went 40 days and 40 nights on that food. I don't know how many times, I've looked up 8 or 10 different times, over and over you have this number 40. Seemingly that has some significance. There were 40, the spies were 40 days in the land, they were in the wilderness for 40 years, and over you go on that. But just what the significance of it is, I don't know. I'm sure that there is a significance that I haven't discovered. All right? Now we continue on. When you have a question, raise the question, because the seventh chapter is just primarily narrative. Now, I'm not going to spend a great deal of time on it, for there's some things in the 8th and the 9th chapter that I do want to deal with more in detail. All right, but I notice verse 5. And Noah did according unto all that Jehovah commanded him. Now, this is an interesting thing about these great men of God. They did what God told them to do. They didn't take things upon themselves. They didn't run before God or separate, but they did what he told them to do, and Noah acted only as the Lord instructed. Now, this is to live by faith. This is what it is to live by faith. And this is what we likewise need to learn. And Noah was 600 years old when the flood of waters was upon the earth. And Noah went in, and his sons and his wife, and his sons' wives with him, into the ark because of the waters of the flood. Now notice he was 600 years old at this time. Now clean beasts, now this is repeated again, not repetitious, but emphasizing the fact that everything was done as God commanded it, as God ordained it. Also of the clean beasts and of beasts that are not clean, and of birds, and of every creeping thing that creepeth from under the ground, there went in two and two unto Noah into the ark, male and female, as God commanded Noah. Now notice they went in unto Noah into the ark. It seems that prior to the flood, there was not the fear upon the animals of humanity that there was later. We'll see that. That's one of the points we want to look at after a while. But anyway, they came in unto him. So he didn't get out and herd them and drive them in and lick them up. Somehow, and by God's overruling power, these animals came into the ark. I don't think it was simply by intuition, although animals do have a great intuition. Or when some catastrophe is about to happen, they say, well, there's going to be an earthquake. You study the animals, you could learn a great deal about it, that there's a sensitivity about them. It's not that otherwise. The same thing before a storm of some kind. But that wouldn't be it. It was simply God bring them in under the ark by his own power over his creations. All right, now verse, as God commanded Noah, and it came to pass after the 7 days that the waters of the flood were upon the earth. Now, here again is an expression of a great faith on Noah and his son's part. Now, you'll notice that the sons are following in the steps of their father. Their faith is strong also. But here, first of all, it took faith to build the ark. Now, then here, Noah brings the animals in. And now he comes in. Yet it hadn't rained a drop. But he shows faith in what God said. God said it would, and it did. And as Peter says, that they were eating and drinking on the day that Noah entered into the ark. We're told that in Matthew, Jesus said it. Right? And so it's going to be at the end of time. For those that believe that Jesus Christ is coming back and execute a final judgment upon the world, these individuals are going to make preparation by their faith. They're going to be ready. And it's going to come, and it's going to come suddenly, twinkling of an eye. It'll not be a long, drawn-out thing, just like this flood. I think it came all at once. All right, now verse 11. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. Right, now, here are two thoughts we want to look at just there, but now we're told the exact date on which it came. Noah was 600 years, 2 months, and 17 days old. Right, now, the end of the flood, when he came out, it was a year and 10 days later. But I want you to note here the windows of the heavens were open, an expression found in the Bible several times, but yet indicating the greatness of the waters as it fell, and then the fountains of the deep were great, deep were broken up. That indicates here upheavals in society, upheavals in nature. Probably here in the ocean here, as there were great upheavals there, maybe great tidal waves assisted in this destruction. But at any rate, here's an upheaval within the oceans, waters under the earth there, they come forth, and then that comes down. A terrible, if you try to think about it here, not only was the rain coming down in torrents, but here are upheavals in nature here. All of this would add to the terror of that particular day and the terror to the people there that were unprepared for it. I think the final day of the Lord is going to be a great and terrible day of the Lord. It's going to come after a while. Be a fearful thing when that takes place. All right? And the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. That means it continued to rain for that long. All right, now in the selfsame day entered Noah and Shem and Ham and Japheth, the sons of Noah and Noah's wife and three wives of his sons with them into the ark. Now notice the sons had no children at this time. At least none indicated, and I'm sure there were none. But later on, while we read about their sons in the 10th chapter, when we come to that in our next meeting, while we'll deal with that a week from tonight, we'll deal with that 10th chapter, some interesting things in it. All right, and the sons into the ark, they and every beast after its kind, and all the cattle after their kind, and every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth after its kind, and every bird after its kind, every bird of every sort, that is of every wing. I don't know where I got these notes. You may have read them, I don't know. But somewhere I read of the size that's been a good while back since I read this. I don't even know where I got the information. I tried to find it today. And I couldn't hear. But taking 17 and a half inches or 18 inches to a cubit here, 18 to 21, so take about 18, you have 95,700 square feet. Then when you take the foot of the 45 feet in height, you have 391,000 cubic feet. That is 13,960 tons of water cubic feet there, water displaced, and 19,940 tons of water displacement. Alright, now, the U.S. Constellation, the largest ship at the time I made these notes, was 23,719 tons, with 53,000 displacement there. So I'll give you an idea of the size of that ship. Now, but if the cubit is longer than that 21 inches or something, it would even be larger. This author said it was 1884 before a ship as large as the Ark was ever constructed. And he determined that this space was equal to 522 railroad cars, that is standard cars, or 8 freight trains of 65 cars each. All right, now, of course, one car with two decks where you could put 240 sheep in one of those standard cars with two decks. Well, that gives you an idea. Now, whether that's so or not, I don't remember where I got that information. I didn't stop to try to figure out today. I just happened to have those notes there that I jotted down somewhere from somebody at some time. All right, but that gives you an idea of the size of this ark here. And what it could contain, that'd be that number of trains there, 55 cars each, why that'd
carry a lot of animals and a lot of feed, wouldn't it? Get along with it. So this was, but of course it was 120 years, and I doesn't say it was 120 years from building the ark. When God told him to build it, yet he says his days shall be 120 years, from which we draw the conclusion that it was 120 years in building. Now, wasting all the time in building or not, another question. These things we don't know. And so what we don't know, we must speculate on. Well, we come back now. All right, there you go. Went in the 2x2s here, and the waters prevailed here, for it rained here for the 40 days. Prevailed upon it, prevailed exceeding. And I want to notice here how that the writer stresses the magnitude of this flood. Back to verse 17 again, and the flood was 40 days upon the earth, and the waters increased. No, I didn't read through verse 15. And they went in unto Noah here, and they went in male and female of all flesh, as God commanded him, and Jehovah shut them in. Right, now Jehovah shut the door, closed that door there, and the flood was 40 days upon the earth, and the waters increased. And bare up the ark, and it was lifted up above the earth. And the waters prevailed and increased greatly. All of this is emphasizing, stressing the idea of the magnitude of the flood and the rising of the waters. That it was done rapidly. Not a slow thing as the rains we're accustomed to. But it was a rapid thing upon the earth, and the ark went upon the face of the water, and the waters prevailed exceedingly. Another emphatic thought, like verse 18 up there, prevailed exceedingly upon the earth, and all the high mountains that were under the whole heaven were covered, or under all the heaven. So here are all the mountains and all the whole heaven. I think that clearly declares the universality of the flood. That the flood didn't just cover an area where the people lived. Covered the whole earth. I don't see how it could have been any other way unless God had built up some kind of a wall out here to preserve it. So that as it built up, it would be flowing on out yonder, you see. So I think the only safe, logical position is that the flood covered all the earth. And I think there are indications of that. So many places, so often you see a mountain here, you could tell one time the rocks were level, they pushed up. Maybe that was a part of the upheaval of that time. I don't know. We don't, a lot of those things we simply do not know. Right? Now 15 cubits upward did the waters prevail, and the mountains were covered. Now, 15, now some think that that's how much that the ship was in the water, rode 15 cubits, some think 15 above the highest mountain. I don't know, they were covered at least. And all flesh died that moved upon the earth, both birds and cattle, and beasts and every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth, and every man. For that includes men and women, every person, all in whose nostrils was the breath of the spirit of life. Of all that was on the dry land died. Yes, sir.
You know, there is some correlation
in conceptual
beauty. Yes. And legends of
flood.
All over the world.
Yeah.
From Asia and Africa and North America,
all of
them.
That's right.
As legends.
And the Babylonians have an unusual story about it. All the rest, and that's correct. You find, as Norm was saying, you find those legends of a great flood throughout all the world. And where did they get the idea? Well, it was handed down and they left the ark. Goes back to an original happening yesterday.
Some time or other, you take those trees and
It either grew there, or they were swept down as trees and covered up and all that. That's right. Petrified forest demonstrates that. And just all the evidence in the world of it. I don't think anybody that has any faith in the Word of God would contradict it. The legends and the petrified forest that you have, different parts of the earth and all of that. And then the fact that they dig down and they find these fossil ruins underneath there, so it's bound to change the contour of the earth in many ways. I suspect that they were up that much of many of these mountains, not all of them, but maybe some of these mountains were pushed up that way. I don't know. So those things we simply don't know. We wish sometimes we could know more about it, but we know enough, I guess. All right, so the mountains were covered. All right? And everything died there. The waters prevailed upon the earth 150 days there. Now, no one has found all these were only one left. That means, I think, that now whether that includes the 40 days or whether there were 150 days after that, it would be 5 months according to their measurement of time. But it could have included 40 days. It probably did, but maybe it didn't. That we're not sure of. But at any rate, the waters prevail long enough that nothing could have lived except the fishes. They're the only things that could have lived. Well, all right, now that's the historical account of the great flood that came. I think just a reading of it, and careful reading of it is about all one needs to do, is to read that and see it and understand it. All right, now in chapter 8, they come out of the ark about a year and 10 months later here, while they come out of it. All right, let us turn now to chapter 8 and notice what the writer continues now with some interesting points here. And God remembered Noah and all the beasts and all the cattle that were with him in the ark. And God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters assuaged. The fountains also of the deep and the windows of heaven were stopped, and the rain from heaven was restrained. Now, my guess is, looking back at 8 and verse 7 here, when they entered here in this month, and the fountains were broken up, and the windows opened. Now then, all of this is stopped. My guess is that God in some way didn't just wait for the evaporation. That much water couldn't have just naturally evaporated in that length of time. So in some way, God removed that water, either the upheavals there pushed it up, maybe they took it back in again, I don't know. But at any rate, it assuaged there rather rapidly, not just instantaneously, but rapidly. Hot and stopped. And the waters returned from off the earth continually. And after the end of 150 days, the waters decreased. Right now then, they're beginning to decrease at the end of that. And the ark rested in the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, upon the mountains of Ararat. Now, if it had already been 5 months, 150 days, the seven would bring us down to the end of the year. It may be that these 7 months are included in the five. I don't think so. Right, now, I want you to note this. The day of the month upon the mountains of Ararat. Now, does the King James say the mountains or Mount Ararat? Say the mountains. All right. Now, I want you to note that. Most people would generally think that it rested on that Mount Ararat which is something like 20,000 feet above sea level, 17,000 feet from the plain here to the summit of it, and the plain is 3,000 feet above. But there were, it was a range of mountains there, and it could have rested on one of the other mountains. But after a while, Noah looks out and sees the tops of mountains here. So all I'm suggesting is that to say that it rested on the top of Mount Ararat, the 20,000-foot mountain, doesn't necessarily follow what it says. Well, it simply says the mountain. So here then was a mountainous range, and it settled somewhere on one of the, some part of this range. I want you to notice the mountains. I hadn't noticed that really until today. And I read this 100 times, I'm sure, but it was not until today that I noticed the mountains there. I say you never do learn it all, do you? You can still be learning after studying a thing for 50 years. You still notice some little point you hadn't learned, noticed before. Huh? And the waters decreased continually under the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the first day of the month, were the tops of the mountains seen. That is, that would mean they came into view. Right, the tops of the mountains came into view. Now, it could have been that this was on the highest one. Now, you begin to see the others. Or it could mean it was low and you begin to see these mountains in different directions here. At any rate, it began to come into view. And it came to pass at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark which he had made, and he sent forth a raven, and it went forth to and fro until the waters were dried up from off the earth. That is, it didn't return. It could live on the carrion of those dead bodies that it would find still floating here and yonder somewhere. And he sent forth a dove from him to see if the waters were abated from off the face of the ground. But the dove found no rest for the sole of her foot, and she returned unto him to the ark. It is said, I have read, that a dove will not rest on a dirty or filthy place. Wants a dry place. Couldn't find that, so it came back. For the waters were on the face of the whole earth, except you could see mountains in the distance yonder, apparently from that other passage. And he put forth his hand and took her and brought her in unto him into the ark. And he stayed yet other 7 days. Now that indicates that it was 7 days between the raven and the dove, although we are not so told. But the fact that he said other 7 days indicates that it was another 7 days that passed. Right, and he stayed yet other 7 days, and again he sent forth the dove out of the ark. And the dove came into him at eventide, and lo, in her mouth was an olive leaf plucked up. So Noah knew that the waters were abated from off the earth. And he stayed yet other 7 days and sent forth the dove, and she returned not again unto him any more. There's some things there that are rather difficult, that as you think of the ark, you're looking at it here from a front view here. I wonder if the eaves of the ark, and if the eaves as they came down did not extend over here, over the ark to keep the rain. Now, it's been my opinion from the study of the ark, that apparently this part along here for a certain size, I mentioned that to you before, that here were the upright pieces here that supported the roof, but that here was an open space all around the ark for the wind to come in and to ventilate. Well, if that be correct, I don't know if that's correct. If that be correct, then one from within could not see out yonder, because here were the eaves. Now, we have to have eaves if you did have this place here, open space around it. You'd have to have eaves to keep the water from blowing in, don't you see? So, just a guess, take it for whatever it's worth or leave it. But it's my guess that here then, in this, he couldn't see out, but now when this dove returned, now he knew it, now he removed the top, they are able to come out a little later. Right? And sent forth the dove, and she returned not again unto him. And it came to pass in the 601st year, in the first month, the first day of the month, the waters were dried up from off the earth. And Noah removed the covering of the ark and looked, and behold, the face of the ground was dried. Well, that's what I'm saying. When it removed now, this part here, so he could see out. Now he could see at a distance and see that we're dry. But up until then, the indication is, and the implication is, that you're looking down, you could just see right about down here, you see, and not out at the distance. Take that for whatever it's worth. That's just a suggestion deduced from the total picture as we had it. All right, now they're ready to come out. And God spake unto Noah, saying, go forth, the 14th verse, and in the second month, on the 27th day of the month, was the earth dry. All right, now that's a year and 10 days. Now, if it's a 360-day a year, which would be as the Hebrews figure it, or if it's 365 as we would figure it, then you have either 370 days or 375 after the flood began till they came out of it. So you're bound to have had some special intervention by Jehovah to dry off the earth, but he didn't do it just instantaneously. But he did it gradually, but rapidly. And now they come forth. And God spake unto Noah, saying, go forth from the ark, thou and thy wife, and thy sons' wives, with thee. Now notice here, Noah doesn't go until God tells him what to do. So Noah entered when God told him, and he went forth when God told him. So he didn't enter nor leave until God told him what to do. Now that's living by faith. So the faith wasn't only demonstrated, class, in the building of the ark. The faith is demonstrated in everything that Noah did. He always did what God told him to do when God told him to do it. Now he's one of the great patriarchs of old, one of the great men, and brought forth his family and was saved by his faith in doing what the Lord told him to do. Now notice they come forth in an orderly way. Bring forth with thee. Now when you come forth, every living thing that is with thee of all flesh, both birds and cattle and every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth, that they may breed abundantly in the earth and be fruitful and multiply upon the earth. Now as you remember, it said there that when he built it, there were cells or nests. We mentioned that in the sixth chapter. The Hebrew is nests. We would say cubicles or cells or little rooms for these animals to be in during that time. You couldn't just turn them loose on the ark there. That would be a place for the different ones. Now, I'm sure that they came out in the same orderly way. That here these came out, then another group would come out. As Noah would release them, otherwise some of the smaller ones would have been overrun by the larger ones, for no doubt all of them were getting a little restless. By the end of a year and a week there, cooked up that way in this ark. And so, alright, now they came out then as they had gone in an orderly way. Now notice the charge, that they may breed abundantly in the earth, and be fruitful and multiply upon the earth. Right? Now this then is to be the charge of the animals as they come out, if they turn loose now, that this may happen in a normal, natural way. And Noah went forth and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him. Every beast, every creeping thing, and every bird, whatsoever moved upon the earth after their families, went forth out of the ark.